When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Howdy, Maya. Welcome to Caucus, everybody. I won't be shouty. I won't go all debate-wise and shout. Is that okay, Lisa?
Yes, thank you, Tom.
Happy with my volume control now?
Yes, thank you.
Excellent. Oh, we welcome to Caucus, and welcome to Caucus Guy and Espiner, who has walked in right on cue. We've just started, bro.
Oh, mate, please, Your Honour.
Get your headphones on and get ready to roll.
Look at that suit. All right, hey. This is Caucus 9 days out from the election. We are not complacent. We are not taking anything for granted. We are still working for every vote. Thank you. We are praying hard for your support.
I've just been out on the campaign trail. Oh, no, I haven't. I've been in court.
You've been in court?
On the New Zealand First Foundation case.
Who are you again?
Oh, I'm Guy Espiner.
And I'm Lisa Owen.
Kia ora, I'm Scott Campbell.
And I'm Tim Watkin, and this is very exciting because happy level one, everybody. Scott Campbell with us in the house, baby.
Yes, thank you, Cabinet, for allowing me to travel to Auckland and be here.
Yep.
Awesome to have you here at last.
No mai, haere mai.
E nā koe.
Excellent. Hey, 370,000 people have already voted, but there are still votes to be done, so we're still doing the work to make sense of this all for you. We've got a little question, a listener question to answer later on. We can talk about the stuff debate and where we think things are heading over the next 9 days, but let's first talk about walkabouts.
Or should we talk about where Guyon's been?
Well, actually, let's do that very first. Yeah. What do you know?
Well, I've just been in the Waitakere District Court to view the proceedings that the SFO are taking against the New Zealand First Foundation. They did a big investigation into that. And it's a name suppression hearing. So I can't tell you everything, but the big news out of today are the charge sheets. The charge sheets have been released, and it talks about the amount of money involved, and it's the thick end of $750,000, so more than $700,000 is at play here. And the charges are that the two people who have been charged in relation to this case used a fraudulent device to take control over that money and end up by paying expenses for the New Zealand First Party. That's the guts of the charges. And the names of the two people are still suppressed, and the judge is giving it 24 hours or so to see whether that goes further.
Now, 24 hours and then the judge will rule?
Yeah, but it may not be that we are able to publish the names then, but the political point for us as a caucus to talk about and for our audience is this whole thing about whether this is relevant to the election and whether the names and connections, if any, to the political party are relevant information. You talked before about 370,000 people already having voted.
Yep.
There are many others who are going to vote on the day. And the argument that Robert Stewart, who is acting for the media companies today, RNZ, NZ Me and stuff, and also a TVNZ lawyer was in court too, was making was this is information that is vital for the public to know because it goes to the heart of whether or not the leader of New Zealand First is making an accurate statement by saying his party is exonerated in this separation between the foundation and the party.
And that's the thing we don't know, what we don't know. Not knowing those names of the suppressed people mean that we can't know whether Winston Peters is being straight with us, and the degree to which either we can judge for ourselves whether or not there is a link there.
We need to test the claim as asserted by the SFO and also the leader of New Zealand First that there is nobody closely associated with the party who has been charged, because we got the list, as Guyon likes to call it, the list of things they're not on the day that the charges were issued. They're not.
They ain't.
They ain't sitting MPs. They ain't current members of the party. And what were the other disclaimers?
Oh, that they weren't ministers or staff members or candidates in the upcoming election. So we know a bit about what.
So there's a lot of stuff that we obviously can't go into. You can't talk about, particularly given the fact that it was being in court today. But you've been around this type of thing for a long time. Do you think it's important that people know?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think it's important that people know. I think these go right to the heart of the idea of a free and open society. You know, voters have access to information about all sorts of things, hopefully, the referendum, the party policies and their characters and their debates. We ask them everything. We even ask them how much a leg of lamb costs or how much a bottle of milk costs. The idea...
And there are laws around how they spend money and what they do with their money.
Yeah, that's right.
For disclosure reasons.
Yep, and so I personally do, and I think, you know, the media companies themselves obviously believe it's important, but we'll see where we get to with the judge.
Yeah, these days media companies reaching in their back pocket to take court action suggests that they do value this information highly because everybody's on much tighter budgets at the moment. Mm. And not everything always appears as it seems, which I suppose is what you were going to start talking about, weren't you?
Well,
plants.
There's a segue. I was going to talk about the walk and my next pun was going to be whether Judith Collins paid a price for her walkabout in Ponsonby yesterday. She went for a walk up Ponsonby Road. Was very concerned about the economy because so few people were there, but there were some people there. And the people, who was there, Scott?
Party people, by the sounds of it. and not even by the sounds of it, there were some very recognisable faces on that walkabout. And interestingly enough, at the end of it, or during some of the TV footage last night, Judith Collins said, well, Ponsonby Road doesn't have a lot of foot traffic. We've got to ask, well, why go there?
It's a curious place. Let's have a look at this bit of footage, which pointed out one person who was waiting on Ponsonby Road for Judith Collins.
Walk about, you're over with the National Party and then you come up to Judith like you're just a member of the public?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been involved in the party for a long time.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
Yeah. Is it?
To put supporters
well,
along
no, walk? No, I was in Ponsonby anyway.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Any chance I can grab your name?
Or?
It just seems like you guys were stacking the walk with...
No, there's a whole lot of general members of the public.
So, just to be very clear, because he didn't give his name, that was Hamish Price, a long-time National Party activist and campaign guy.
Yeah, and this was just gold. just watching this unfold was
awkward.
Just like, I mean, get out the popcorn and play it again, please, because it was sort of like the casual nonchalantly walking along Ponsonby Road, and then the first person who I saw in the sequence was a relatively young chap who kind of came forward and thrust his hand out and shook Judith Collins' hand and said, you know, you did a great job in the press debate. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then, you know, a few more metres down the road and then someone else came forward and the message was not dissimilar. And then it just kept happening. And then I thought, okay, you know, and it was the frequency of the casualness of the encounters.
and the awkwardness
that put the radar up. And the thing is, we got a lot of feedback on this on Checkpoint.
Yeah.
And someone texted in and said, when is a person a plant and when are they an invited guest? And I thought that's interesting because the explanation was, you know, these are people who wanted to come out and meet the leader. Yeah, fine, but be upfront about it. Don't pretend, because, hello, let's just put the question out there. Would Judith Collins know who Hamish is?
Yes.
Right. So,
undoubtedly, that
did not play out like, hi, g'day, Hamish, good to see you. Oh, it's nice that you've come down to see me when I'm wandering along here. It was as if these were just random strangers that she'd stumbled across on the tumbleweed-esque Ponsonby Road.
Maybe on the brief they left out the part at the bottom which said, don't hang around at the end.
I mean, I think this just speaks to the disorganisation of the campaign, which we've talked about before. I mean, would they be the first party to plant someone in a media op? Absolutely not.
No.
The idea is that you probably do that, but you pepper pot them in with a wider crowd and a sympathetic audience, right? No one's going to go into hostile territory. So that's not new. Jacinda Ardern was University, was it Dunedin?
Yep. Yeah.
She was.
Yes,
great, you know, a lot of Labour, you know, obviously a lot of younger students were supporting her. You know, that's just smart politics. And yeah, you'd bring in some people around to swell up the numbers. But it stunk of a last minute thing. Oh, we better get some people who know her. And so you get a staffer or an ex-staffer. And again, just this shambolic seat of the pants stuff from National that is really You know, they've been skating along on that thin ice, and just, I think what we're seeing now as the clock starts to drain away is they've just been falling through and drowning a bit.
And it was the way in which they presented themselves when they were kind of called out about it, because, you know, it's the idea that they tried to imply, if not explicitly state, that they were random encounters. And then there was that other just moment, the kind of possum in the headlight moment, when Judith Collins was asked, you know, it seems like there's a few plants along the way here.
And where was Jimmy?
She gave the...
That's a different kind of...
Different kind of plant, yeah. And then Emma Mallow, the candidate, the national candidate for Auckland Central, stood right by her side, and then she just got the Judith Collins side eye. Yeah, the side eye that says, this is on you,
yeah,
step
you
up.
Take this
you
one.
Take this one. Well, I'm not going there.
We're at a time, and you know, we're 9 days out from the big day, and you're trying to sell the party on, trust us, we will be able to bring this economy back.
Strong team, baby.
It can't organise a booze up in a brewery type of moment, you know?
And look, I was out with, I was planning to go to that walkabout on Ponsonby Road if my dog hadn't been sick yesterday, because I was trying to get a walkabout with each of the main party leaders. But I did last Friday go follow Jacinda Ardern down Newmarket when she did her walkabout in Auckland. And it was interesting that when I first got there, there was, you know, the press gaggle standing around slightly awkwardly to do, waiting for something to happen. Her staff were around looking desperately and thinking, oh, where do we get a crowd from? And for a couple of minutes, I thought, oh, this is interesting. There's not just because you happen to stand on Broadway Newmarket doesn't mean you actually get a crowd. She started to walk down the street, and she was looking for babies and looking for dogs. But it took at most 5 minutes. She got to Teed Street, if people know Auckland, halfway down Broadway, and said hello to a couple, a family about to cross the road. And by the time she'd finished that conversation, there were three other people there. And then she started talking to them and moved around the corner, and then there was another three. And within a couple of minutes, there was a queue around the corner down Broadway. And we're talking about high-vis workers, we're talking about punk teenagers, grandmothers. There was literally a queue. And there was a couple of young women who had just written their first children's book and wanted to show it to her and get her to sign it, which she did and had the photo. And they had the photo with her, started to walk away, and literally skipped away down the road, hugging each other. There's a different level of star quality, right?
And it was the same for John Key back in the day.
Exactly.
And a lot of us have been on the election campaign trails over the years, and largely New Zealand election campaigns have been conducted in shopping malls.
Yeah.
You know,
you go where people are.
Yeah, right? You go where people are, and then you wing it largely. And how good are you at interacting? What do you do with a heckler? I mean, Winston Peters is very good with a heckler. He likes that, and he'll enjoy that, and he'll play off the crowd because he's an experienced politician. And so you take what comes, but to plant obvious staff members and have them stick out like dog's balls, if I can use that.
You can place. Use that can term.
It's not Tim's.
You're online, mate. You're fine.
How's your dog, Tim? Is it okay?
He's getting operated on, but he's you know, God willing, mate.
You've still got those parts, or
no, he lost those a long time ago.
Anyway,
there's a segue from here. Is that
where do we go?
9 days out from the election, and we're talking about the things that matter.
But yeah, I think it was Dom. No, I won't talk about Dom Brash and Bob Clarkson. Anyone who Googles those two things in the previous conversation will get it.
Yeah. But this came on the back of a couple of bad days for Judith, because
didn't you?
Talking about a dog's bollocks, more of a dog's breakfast really, has been national a couple of days before that. There you go, I found the segue. Was this leaked email from Denise Lee, which all started with Judith Collins having her big long interview with Mike Hosking on ZB, and a clearly prearranged announcement that went something like this.
We've got about 3 minutes before the half hour, so let's talk about your policy this morning, the Auckland Council.
Yes.
What do you want to do?
Well, look, I reckon they're a mess. So what we're saying is that in the first 100 days, put in place terms of reference and inquiries to actually go through and see how, after 10 years of being all brought together into one council, what's gone right and what's gone wrong. And I think what we're going to find is more's gone wrong than what's gone right.
So this was a big announcement, supposedly, on ZB, which basically was a review of the Auckland Council, which was, you know, not the most dramatic announcement, but it was you know, her thing for the day to kick off the day and get some headlines around sticking it to Auckland Transport and Auckland Council. Denise Lee, the National Party spokesperson for Auckland and a former Auckland City Councillor and someone in a very tight race in Mangakikia, wrote an email going, I don't know anything about this. This is a nightmarish policy. This is really bad culture to go out without telling your Auckland spokesperson about it. What the heck's going on? And then somebody within the National Party leaked that to the media. It's pretty, and let's be clear.
Shaking his head.
It's
ill-discipline, first and foremost, for the fact that that email supposedly was copied to about 50 people within the caucus itself and the party, and then for somebody then to go and send it out further than that.
Mm.
Again, I think it all comes back to this idea of trust us, we can look after you, when actually they're fighting amongst themselves, obviously. I think, you know, leaders, and over the last couple of weeks, both Jacinda Ardern and Judith Collins have made policy on the hoof. We've seen that already. Yeah. But the other members of the party and the candidates will just suck it up. It's your leader are the ones who are out there, they're fronting it, they're the ones who you hope will become the Prime Minister, and you reap the rewards afterwards. But to have a petty little hit at the... And it wasn't something that was a huge announcement.
No.
It might be to Denise Lee because having her connections with Auckland Council, but it's not something you really want to die in a ditch over, surely.
No, I mean, that was a naive thing for Denise Lee to do, to copy in 50 people. I mean, that's going to be risky. Anyone could have told you that. But again, I get back to my point of organisation. I take your point that the leader has the captain's call. And if you're on the debate and Paddy Gower says, oh, you're going to do a review into Pharmac, and you go, yes, then you can kind of understand that. This felt more like pushing out a policy because beating up on Auckland Council is kind of fun and attractive to voters, and so you put out this kind of review. And again, it just seems to me that they're just grasping at straws, throwing the ball around desperately to try and make hits. And I think Judith Collins had been playing out of her skin, but I mean that in a way that she'd been playing above herself, I think. And what we're seeing is that was never going to last forever. The sporting analogy is biffing the ball around with huge passes on your try line, trying to get a last-minute victory. You know that the intercept pass is coming, and that's what's happened to now. We've seen it a number of times, and this to me was one of them.
Yeah, I found this really interesting too from a couple of points of view. She was always going to make this announcement on this radio show because the host said right at the start of the session, you've got a new policy that you want to announce. So they'd been given the heads up. So she clearly came prepared with something to throw out there, something new, a bone to give the media. So there was a degree of preparation in this. How much, we don't know.
Says 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, but yep. She says 2 to 3 weeks. When Scotty's saying that, you know, this was not going to be the killer blow to announce a review of Auckland Council, the other thing to remember is they've just done this massive review of all of those, you know,
Controlled, the council itself,
controlled authorities like ATEED and the CCOs and all the rest of it, and Watercare. They already did that. They already did a massive review, and the findings of that have been released. So she's kind of digging up old ground as well. So it wasn't even that she went to the wall for something that was really going to bring it on the campaign trail. Now we see that there's still dissent in the ranks. And is this about the fact that they all think they're about to crash and burn in the election? If she doesn't bring home a certain number, is she toast? By her own musings in her own book, she says that National Party MPs do not tolerate loser leaders.
Yeah.
So, and we're hearing through various media reports that there's already this low rumble in the background.
But there always has been, right? I mean, let's be honest. National was going through, you know, they'd really picked Bridges as the guy for this one. And then when they tried to change horses, there was a degree of desperation all year. And by the time they got to Collins, she hadn't been popular within the caucus earlier. And so this was a... you know, to quote Mike Moore, save the furniture kind of situation, right? She was there to make sure they didn't crash and burn completely. And so if you are in a save the furniture race, you came in late, you're not going to have time to consult with your caucus extensively. You aren't going to make up stuff off the hoof. I think that's a given. I don't blame her for that at all. She's been given this really hard job to try and pull something up from a really difficult situation. You think about National 3 months ago, you know, fighting with each other and all over the place.
Yeah,
she's been given a job. She's got to have license to put her own stamp on
it. So I was talking to a guy earlier this week who's a through and through blue supporter. And yeah. He said to me, for the first time ever, I'm going to vote for Jacinda Ardern. Mm. He said, I was thinking this 2 or 3 weeks ago. He said, and then I watched Judith Collins in the debates, and I went, oh, actually, we may have a bit of a... It wasn't as much as we're going to win the election, but it was, we might not shame ourselves as much as what we thought we were going to previously.
Yeah.
And he said, so maybe I will vote for the National Party this time around. It's quite interesting that Judith has... you know, saved, and it's only one voter, but she has pulled him back.
It's the Helen Clark factor, and you guys will remember this, the Bulger-Helen Clark debate. Helen Clark was never going to win the election, but she was seen to put in this good performance, and she held on, even though she held on through that because she showed some credibility. She wasn't always the first choice of everybody either.
No.
So, I mean, I don't know if they would both hate the fact that they're being compared to each other or love it. I'm not sure. But maybe... Judith Collins, if she comes in with a respectable number, if she can't win it, she comes in with a respectable number, she gains some ground in some of the debates, although I think, looking at the press debate, that she kind of crossed a line there. You know, she could hang around.
And that's that for me, look, I'm guessing. I mean, I've certainly, some of the people in National that I speak to have been very clear that throughout this, that, you know, she's a... Well, as I was saying to you earlier, she's a temporary tax cut. She's a short-term stimulus measure, right? She's there to get them over the line, but there's not a great swell of support saying, take us through another 3 years, Judith. I think there's definitely dissent within that camp. But it's that situation where maybe this leak, look, and it's a guess, but you've got to wonder whether she was starting to play out if it's going to look too good. And people are like, we don't want to look so good. The people who are opposing her with the National don't want her to look like a credible leader of the opposition so that she does get another 3 years.
I think sometimes, I mean, you can weave all around on this stuff and you all make good points there. I like to fast forward straight to 2023
yep.
and go, would you go into that election with Judith Collins?
No, you go in with Christopher Luxon, who's had a term to get himself sorted, maybe. So you want to keep
maybe.
Her.
But you see, once you've answered that question, I like to work backwards, and I think the MPs probably do too to some degree, and you go, I mean, let's say, as is likely, she loses and probably gets under 35. You know, let's just say that it's around there, 33, whatever.
Yep.
Would you go into 2023 with Judith Collins against Jacinda Ardern? And I think you'd have to say no as an MP, and then you probably once you've got that mark on your head and you've had that discussion, then it becomes very difficult to handle.
But that's my point. If there were people in the party who don't want her to lead in the future and were thinking, she could get 38, then 39...
You think they need Kepta?
They need Kepta.
Yeah,
to make sure she doesn't get there.
If you do look over this next 3 year period, right, it's a little bit of a poison chalice because somebody has to be able to bring the economy back. And either Jacinda Ardern led Labor Party is going to do a fantastic job and she'll be Prime Minister for the next 15 years, or they will crash and burn and somebody's going to be standing there ready to take up the slack.
Yeah, there's a lot of it is timing, isn't it? Absolutely. But it hasn't really fallen Judith's way, unfortunately.
But they've already fired a few leaders out of the cannon, though, and there's only so many you've got in the back row that you can keep rolling out.
True.
So do you sit with the leader that you've got if you fail at the election, bide your time while others may be coming up the ranks and getting some miles on the clock, and then sub them out the year before the election?
Something like that.
Okay, good, we've got it sorted. if it plays out that way.
That's right.
Who's going to leak this one?
And the thing is, it's not both of these things. Emma Mallow, this doesn't help her in a tight race in Auckland Central. Denise Lee in a tight race in Mangekia. Doesn't help either of these two, does it? This controversy swirling around them.
It is interesting now that we're talking about a close race in Auckland Central, because it wasn't that long ago that the polls suggested that it was anything but a close race. Yep. It was either going to be Labor coming through home and hose or that the Greens might be there or thereabouts. But Emma Mallow now is giving it a bit of a fight. What I am seeing is that at least around the country there is a bit more of a fight. And in the regions, and I've seen it down in the Bay of Plenty as well too, where actually I think the Labor Party candidate, Kitty Tipu Allen, in the East Coast Bay or East Coast region, about 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, you would have said, yep, she was strolling through, and she probably still will, but that's previously been a safe blue seat. And I think...
Yeah, I wouldn't guarantee anything down there.
No, and again, the Labor Party turned up this week.
Well, what about Wairiki?
Yeah, well, they did. So the Māori Party Caucus,
from Labour.
From Labour turned up in force in Tauranga this week. In fact, it was a couple of days ago. And they haven't done that over the past 3 years. No. They are a little bit worried about that. See, my kid said to me this morning, let's go and vote, Pa. And I said, well, I normally do that on a Saturday, a bit of a traditionalist. but I said, who should I vote for? They said, oh, the man with the hat.
Ah.
Which was interesting. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Rawiri. Yeah.
And he is actually coming through.
Yeah.
And
I saw him on the debate. Can't remember if it was Māori TV. I think it was a Māori TV debate that I saw him. It was in Te Reo Māori, so I didn't understand all of it. But he was pretty impressive from what I heard.
But they are worried, and I think the concern for Labour in that area is that if Wairiki was to go Māori Party, then Māori Party come back. Māori Party have already said they wouldn't go with National at this election.
So it was the Māori TV did a poll. It's only about 500
with
voters.
With Curia, though.
Yeah, with Curia.
And that's David Farrar's polling company, so they do know what they're on about.
Yeah, so that put Tamati Coffee at 38%, 26% for Rawiri Waititi, and 25% undecided. And I thought to myself, how many of the undecideds are actually undecided or don't vote? Because that's going to be crunchy for them. And given that there was only about 1,700 vote majority for Tamati Coffee last election, it's quite tight.
Yeah, well,
there are small numbers in that seat, so it's not a huge turnout.
And it's pretty staunch in the different parts of the region. So Rotorua has previously gone really hard behind the Māori Party, but then switched behind Labour in the last election. Mm-hmm. And the sort of the Eastern Bay of Plenty has really been, or was previously quite hard Labour, but that's where Rawiri comes from, and he's got good followings.
And he's a really popular grassroots guy, isn't he? He's been working, he's a kapa haka guy, really well known in the electorate.
Oh, and he's everywhere. You see his face everywhere.
Yeah,
he's put in the time.
And Tamati Coffee, I had a quick look at the party list. He's number 37 on Labour's list. So, wouldn't you be pushing, you'd be pushing the Tufa deal, wouldn't you?
And which is what is coming out now. So they are definitely pushing all over social media, which is you're going to get your Labour Māori MPs. Go ahead and tick.
It's interesting to me that Māori Party not even asking for party vote. In their advertisements, if you watch their TV ads and you see them on any of these debates, and the Hui have run good debates, and so have Māori TV on the Māori electorates, they're not even asking for the party vote at all. Yeah.
They don't, and the billboards now, they're sticking up electorate vote, candidate vote.
Yeah, there's a guy, and probably looking forward to another couple of elections from now, but there's a guy called Tauka Teferis who is actually down south into Taitunga electorate. Watch him.
An extremely impressive young politician. I don't know, he's that young. He might have been mid-30s, late-30s, but in terms of a guy who's fairly new on the scene, man, he was really impressive.
One for the future, that guy.
Yeah, and it was a lot stronger than, a lot of Labour or National candidates, experienced politicians, you see. He was very, very good.
Whereas in Te Tauhauru, Labour seems to be more confident down there now. They seem to reckon they've got the ground game going. Gaylene Nepia, who's Adrian Raffaele's sister, is running his campaign, and she's a legend, as a campaigner, ran Taranaturia's campaigns and so forth when they were involved in the Māori Party. They seem more confident than they were at the start.
Well, again, this was another Māori TV poll in Te Tauhauru, and it was 38% for Adrian Rurafi and 20% for Debbie Ngāre Wepaka, 30% undecided on that poll. So again, wider gap. A high number of undecideds.
Man, I have to say that Debbie Ngāre Wepaka was very impressive on the Hui debate too. And I'm not carrying any torch for the Māori Party, but
I agree.
I looked at her up against Adrian Rudafi, who. He was the incumbent, but he didn't have a lot of numbers. And I was looking at her going, wow, this is like an experienced, not quite a Helen Clark figure, but she was really good.
She's impressive, and she's got a good background in both the iwi politics side of things and also in iwi business. And again, one who could come through the ranks. But to be fair, and I think pundits for God, the last three elections, I think when I was leading the bulletin way back in the days at one point, have been writing.
Did you get a couple of leads? I usually turn in the second break, the top of the second break.
Have been writing off Adrian Rudafi, and mate, you used to get it in your earpiece to follow Scotty. He's just said something. I think we've been writing off him for a long time, but it's based around Ratana, and it's been a Labour stronghold for a long time.
So Te Pata Māori back in or not?
I think that they've given it a great shot. I think we'll see them in 2023.
And I actually think Wairiki, while everyone's got their faces turned to Te Tai Hauuru, it's Wairiki that could bring them if it does. Mm. And then they'll be looking for a little extra so they can have one person and a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Press debate was the big set piece this week and was interesting because it was different from the other debates. Let's hear the first clip from there, which because COVID came back in and there was a really strong exchange on COVID.
This is directly contrary. What I'm hearing from Judith tonight is directly contrary to their criticism that we should have opened the borders to Australia and China early, have lifted our restrictions early. We have been criticised by the National Party every step of the way for our COVID response. Now, when you are in a pandemic, you cannot afford to change your mind every 5 minutes. Every leader we've had from National has had a different position, and it's been wrong.
Oh. If Miss Ardern would like to go back and have a look at what was said, it was nothing like what she's just said.
So that was interesting because it was one of the few moments in the debates where Jacinda Ardern has gone on the offensive. But I accepted that invitation from Judith Collins and we went back and had a little look at what some of the previous national leaders were saying. So let's just have a quick listen. If we listen to Simon Bridges, this is April 14, back in his first grab we got here from during lockdown, him talking on Magic Talk.
We have to get out of lockdown as soon as we possibly can. We have to let people get back to work. And, you know, I think the government's been in this, its health or the economy. I think we can chew gum and walk at the same time. I think we can have good borders, testing, tracing, PPE, but also safely allow a lot of business to get back into it. You know, there's no magic in these levels. They were dreamed up in government, and I'm not being dismissive of them, but there is absolutely no reason why we couldn't go from level four straight to level two.
So, interesting comment there. We'll talk about it in a second, because then we'll play Muller and his talk about borders, because he did a Facebook Live video shortly after he became leader, and that was what Jacinda Ardern was talking about when China was mentioned. So this is Todd Muller.
Our next door neighbour, Australia, have had similar success in terms of their COVID response. And so now we are getting very close to the point where those two countries need to look at opening their borders in a way that keeps us safe, but it enables commerce and particular people-to-people connections to occur. I think we need to push on beyond the New Zealand-Australia bubble. We need to start thinking now about what would be the next sensible country to open. How can we move into other countries, like China, in due course, in a way that keep our people safe, but allow us to capture the opportunity of getting up there first because we're a country that is so relatively free now of the threat of COVID.
Yeah, that was interesting. The first thing I would say is, wow, when I heard Simon Bridges' voice, I thought, gosh, we haven't heard that for a while. You know, right. Where's he been? Yeah. Kind of
reminded
thing.
Me of working from home because internet connection was so bad. What was he doing, driving down to Parliament or something, a few hundred k's?
Yeah, but it took you back, didn't it? Yeah, so there have been slightly nuanced approaches from National, you would say. And the other thing is with Judith Collins was denying that there had been shifts in the leadership position. Well, clearly there were. She also came out really hard and fast and pounced on Jacinda Ardern over Samoa and when she was positioning Samoa as a first mover and she was doubling down on stuff that she had said in one of the earlier debates where she reckoned that Samoa had gone earlier with closing the borders, which is simply not true. New Zealand acted faster than Samoa, closed the borders on the 19th of March. Samoa followed suit a day later on the 20th of March. There were other changes to way both countries handled the border, but I feel like we got a half story from Judith there.
And to be fair, Ardern wasn't completely accurate. If you listen to National's point there, they were saying they were clearly changing positions, but it was always on a preface of if we close the borders, if we quarantine, which we weren't doing
if
it's safe. So there's a bit of on both sides.
Yeah, to me, again, it was more down to strategy. I mean, Judith Collins was treating it like a town hall debate, which it was, but she was responding to the hecklers, and I think she over-egged her performance. I've been supportive of her television performance debates and thought she did very well in both the TV1 and TV3 debates. I thought this time she came across as far too aggressive because she was playing to the hall. Now, again, strategy. What do you say to your person who's going in there? Are you playing to the 400-500 people who are in the crowd, or are you playing to 200, 300, 400,000 people who may have been watching it on television or on the internet? So, again, I think Judith Collins all fired up, smashes in there, and that's all great. But I just think that National is losing on strategy.
There's a great story from Live Aid with U2 and Bono, where all the bands were. But this was where
you've lost half the audience already.
I know. I realise that.
Carry on.
Where U2 kind of broke through. U2 kind of broke through because he jumped off the
next
stage.
To Coldplay, the band that people love to laugh at white people about.
I know, but I'm walking right in there, walking
anyway,
into the fire.
Carry on.
Anyway, the story goes that all the bands were playing to the crowd at Wembley. He jumps off the stage. The crowd in Wembley can't see him at all, right? He's lost the audience in front of him, but the cameras follow him. And he goes and has this one-on-one moment in the middle of Live Aid with someone in the crowd, exchanges a flower or gives a kiss or something. And the billions at home get this completely different perspective, right? Which is exactly what you're saying. He knew who his audience was. It was the billions at home, not the few hundred thousand in the
room. Yeah, and especially
room.
When you're up against it, like, because that crowd seemed fairly Labour, didn't it? And Jacinda Ardern is more popular, and in the People's Republic of Christchurch, and you're probably going to get a bit of a hiding. So,
but I guess also though, at the start of this campaign, Jacinda Ardern was still the Prime Minister managing COVID, right? And I guess now that we've come down through the levels, there's still a focus on COVID, obviously, but she's not day-to-day in level 9 of the Beehive managing this pandemic as closely as what she was previously. And I just think that her momentum has started to pick up again. We're starting to see that sort of spark. She's mobbed in the streets again.
Yep.
I'm really interested to understand what your question is from one of our listeners.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get it in a second because we're going to wrap up.
Like,
no, we can't leave things out.
Like we'll a capital
get to that.
Gains
no.
We'll wrap up.
I just want to say on Judith Collins.
Do you want to play that grab for you?
Yeah.
Can we play the Collins Felisa grab, please, guys?
That is why we have a quarantine system and one of the most robust in the world.
And why aren't they paying for
it? It is completely incorrect to say that there was a failure that led to that outbreak.
Well, where did it come from? In a rock in your garden?
We have never been
able to identify the source.
Right. And if I may finish on this, Luke, according to Judith, putting Gerry Brownlee in charge of the border is the answer.
Well, it's better
I know people
putting,
in this room believe that it's not
putting,
true.
Hey, it's a lot better than putting David Clark in charge of health and then sending him on holiday for 2 months during a pandemic.
Hey. I just wanted to say, inside voice, Judith Collins, inside voice. So just very quickly on that, I agree with Guy on somewhat. I felt that she thought she was in the bear pit at Parliament and she just crossed over that line to be assertive and in control to kind of, going hey to your opponent was a bit, took me to the Biden-Trump kind of debate for a nanosecond.
So Greens and New Zealand First and ACT, the minor parties just in the last week, what do they need to do as I get set up for this listener question?
They need to get back into Parliament. they need to jump over the 5% threshold.
They need to search under those rocks that Judith was talking about trying to find some voters. Looking pretty... Even listening to James Shaw over the last few days, even he's saying it's going to be a hard ass to get there. And then this morning, I think I heard him talking about the fact that, we might not have got a capital gains tax across the line, but, he's still hopeful of that wealth tax, which is effectively the same thing in his mind.
I think it's interesting that the Greens have been playing that line about how, we might not make it, and we in the media quite often react, that means they're not going to make it. I actually think it's probably quite smart because he's saying to his voters, look, don't think you can just vote for Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah.
We need your vote. We might not make it. And I actually think it's probably, they've obviously thought quite...
It's an orchestrated campaign
strategy. Remember, it was right back in the Green School. Do you remember that?
Yep.
They were saying, and the media went with it. They admit they might not make it. And they're like, great.
He used the line this morning, a vote for the Greens is a vote for Labour. He actually used it himself.
Yeah. No, I think they've been blatant now. It's Jacinda Plus. Mm. You can get Jacinda on her own or you can get Jacinda Plus. And that's the Green Party strategy for the next 8 or 9 days.
I wonder what Jacinda thinks about that one.
Whereas Winston's still waiting for a game changer.
It was parked on a yellow line the last time I looked. Did you see that story? His bus was parked on a yellow line.
Well, we saw him at the debate, the Nation debate.
Oh, yeah, we did.
He was phoning it in a bit, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was still talking about Lee Kuan Yew and the Māori Battalion.
Yeah.
and, you know, Roger Nomics.
Yeah, there was a touch of the U2 archive to him. Absolutely. I had expected him to bring his A game because in those debates he usually dominates, holds the crowd, you know, controls the room. And it was sort of like at various points you sort of forgot he was on the stage.
So in the last 2 minutes, my son and I writes Solomon and Jeremy Randerson. I think Jeremy Randerson is the dad, Solomon is the son. My son and I were discussing the upcoming election. He can't vote for another 6 years. I love this when dads and kids get into their politics debate when they're nice and young. But the son is thinking about who he might vote for when he can. We were thinking about possible outcomes for this election, stumbled upon the following conundrum. What would happen if Labor ended up with 50 MPs, National 49, Act 11 and the Greens 10? So a dead heat, 60-60 in 120 seat parliament. An unlikely couple, a grand coalition, another election, what would happen? I've got the answer. Do you guys want to have a punt?
I think I've got the answer.
Go on.
But, all right. So what happens is they try and form a government. We make the assumption that they'll divide down the lines,
yes,
because they're wanting to say that there's a complete and total heat. It goes to a confidence vote where the current government, if they lose that confidence vote, they're out potentially, and it's up to the Governor-General. Sorry, folks, you're back at the polls doing it all again.
Guyan's over there doing the numbers.
Yeah, no, just doing the numbers here, just having a look at the numbers. I mean, in principle...
In principle,
the parties try to form a government. The Governor-General would sit back and watch.
Yes.
And the parties would try to do that. I mean, it's possible under a scenario like that, you might say Labor-Green at 60 votes and Labor arguing it's the largest party. It's possible that they could convince an ACT party to abstain or some weird thing like that. It's possible to happen. This is probably what would happen. If they didn't, and no one could tell the Governor-General that they could command a majority in the House, then, unfortunately, you'd go back and have another race.
The National Party leak crosses the floor, becomes a minister.
No! This is what I said. Yeah. And so this is why I rang Andrew Geddes this morning, and as he pointed out, he said the party hopping law now means you can't do that.
It's not just that. What you're talking about is the Tapsell 93 situation where Bolger took a Labour MP, made him Speaker, you bring him out of the vote because he's a Speaker. Doesn't work under MMP. Speaker's vote. But a vote is counted.
So Henry and Co. going across with Jenny Shipley keeping the power. Motive you can try and
Pacific.
Split off, but you can't do that anymore.
You can't neutralise them with the Speaker anymore.
Oh, God, let's not have another election.
We were working on the purity of the question that nobody can negotiate past the half and
so
half.
So, yes, you'd offer ACT probably
we've
something.
We've got to get out of here, Tim.
But it would probably be back to another election. That is the answer. Thank you, Randerson, for that question. Thank you, everybody, for listening again this week. We have one more before Election Day. Listen to us on Spotify or Google Podcasts or, of course, on Apple. We're on the RNZ website. Thanks for listening. Ka kite.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.